Start your own radio show now and join our amazing radio family of fun and interesting talent. Be the radio star you've always wanted to be. Visit LATalkRadio.com or email info at LATalkRadio.com now and start your own show today.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Is another Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio, and I am your host, Jim Christina of The Writer's Block. I am in the studio tonight with my replacement co-host, Bobby Jean Bell, is unfortunately under the weather tonight, and I've dragged in my friend and business partner, Richard Polinelli, and put him in Bobby's chair, and there he sits. And Richard, you have an announcement to make.
I have breaking news to do, too,
news.
I just about a minute before we go on the air, I just found out that Escaping Infinity is a finalist for the Dragon Awards, the second annual Dragon Awards. Voting opens today, and it'll run till the end of the month, and on September 2nd, they'll have the ceremony, so... There you go. I made the finals.
And Escaping Infinity, for those of you who don't know what it is, it's a science fiction novel written by Richard. In fact, we talked about it on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's a great book. It's a great story. And we congratulate you, Richard.
Thank you. I am thrilled to death just to be a finalist. And there's some very good books in there, too. So it's kind of an honor to be mentioned in the same sentence.
As I would think it would be. Yes, for sure. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Tuscany Bay Books. And Richard, of course, is the other half of Tuscany Bay Books. And we are in business to help the indie writer and the new writers kind of navigate their way through the system. And if they need proofreading, if they need editing, which a lot of these new writers do. Richard and I are there to help you, and we have editors that are on staff that can help you edit and proofread and format your books and get them ready for market. We can even do a printer for you, and we can hand you a shelf-ready piece of material.
Yep.
And we're excited. I mean, it's going to be a great, great company, and it's actually an arm of Black Dog Publishing. It's Tuscany Bay Books, and the number you can reach us at is 805-795-3165, and you can reach Richard at R. Polinelli, P-A-O-L.
I-N-E-L-L-I. You're Italian, too.
I looked at you and I spaced. Uh-huh. I'm thinking Escaping Infinity, not Polinelli.
I saw the beer in the headlight.
R. Polinelli at Tuscany Bay Books, or you can email me at jchristina@TuscanyBayBooks, and we can give you a heads up and an arm up on what you're doing. And it's also brought to you by Out West. It used to be Out West Boutique and Cultural Center. Now it's just known as Out West. And they are your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include Scully Leather Company, Rock Mountain Ranch, where Dan Post boots, and American West handbags, just to name a few. And if you want to go to the shop, their online store, it's www.scvoutwest.com. Their toll-free number is 877-340-9378. And if you're interested in attending their concert series, which is the fourth Friday of every month, the ticket number, and it's a direct dial for their concert series, is 661-347-9700, and their tickets are $25. And if you tell them that you heard this ad on the Writer's Block, they're $20. So there you have it. And since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service. TFM Truckload. That is the absolute best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today, 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski and tell him you heard it on the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way, the most expedient way possible, is what you want. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry. So call at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call them today, and they do have a brand new program that's out that's, I guess, spectacular. And that's I don't think it's going to be cheap, but I think it's going to handle everything you need to do as far as moving freight. So that being said, we have a return guest tonight. She's a resident of Missouri. And if you want to call and talk to her, it is number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. And again, that's 818-602-4929. And John Lenore, if you're listening, and I know you're probably out there wherever it is that you move from L.A., our guest tonight is Caroline Giamanco, and you may want to tune in and listen to her. She's a terrific guest and a great writer, and we just love having her on the show. I'm trying to find her biography. Here we go. She grew up on a farm in southern Missouri. After graduating high school, she moved to Tucson, Arizona to attend the University of Arizona. Oh, she was a party girl. She is a public school English social studies teacher who has lived in Arizona, New Mexico, and now Missouri once again. She is the mother of two sons, Rick and Kevin, both of whom are military veterans. Well, congratulations, and I applaud their service. And she is close to Keith, who is her other, and this is what we'll be talking about tonight, Keith Giamanco, his twin daughters, Elise and Marissa. So if you would please welcome to the Writer's Block, Caroline Giamanco. Caroline, you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, you guys.
Hey, what's going on? What's happening? What are you doing?
Oh, it dawned on me while you were doing your intro that all three of us have Italian names.
Yeah, we do.
We should have a pizza or something.
Oh God, no. You know, I eat pizza and it just sits in this dough glob in the middle of my stomach. The only thing that actually digests is the pepperoni. The rest of it just sits there.
Just sits there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's unfortunate, Jim.
I know, but what are you going to do? I mean, who are you going to call? Hey,
that's true.
I appreciated the message I got from you yesterday. And the message from Caroline that I received yesterday on Facebook was, would you give me a pre-release book review on her new book? And I've said, of course, I would be honored, of which I will be. And as soon as I get that copy, I'll get it read and get your review back out.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Sure, but it's got to be a good book.
No pressure there.
No.
Yeah, I'm hoping it is, especially now that it's on air. Yes, I'm hoping that
I'm not going to say anything about the book, only that I'm going to be reviewing it. So there you have it. We're going to be
talking.
Well, you're welcome. We're going to be talking tonight about your latest book, which I believe is out now, called Guilty Hearts. And
yes.
Guilty Hearts is the story of 11 separate couples or people that have met, fallen in love, and one of them is incarcerated. I believe it's always the guy. And it's the women's story primarily, a little bit of the guys, but primarily the women telling the story of how they met and what this person has done for their life. And the first question I have to ask for you, Caroline, is where did you meet these women?
Well, let me back up just a second and explain the genesis of Guilty Hearts, because when I released Banknotes, my first book,
right,
that told the story of Keith Giamanco and how we met and how we fell in love. And so I started doing Barnes & Noble book signings around the country, and I always get the same look from people when they realize that I'm the one who is involved with an inmate.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are surprised because they see this middle-class, professional, public school teacher, and it doesn't gel with what they have in their mind as someone who's involved with an inmate.
Mm-hmm.
And I always get surprised with like, and comments like, "You really? Well, you don't seem like the type." Well, I'm exactly the type because there is no type of person that ends up with someone that they love who's incarcerated. And it got me thinking that once they talk to me or once they read banknotes, most people will say, "Well, Caroline and Keith, they seem pretty legit. They seem like a solid couple." But it's all those other people who love inmates that are crazy. There's something wrong with them. And that completely did not match the people that I knew who had loved ones who were in prison. Because from my criminal justice reform efforts and from just the situation of now having a loved one in prison, you get to know people who are in the same situation. And I knew several compelling stories of families and couples. And it's not just wives and girlfriends of inmates, but also the mothers, the daughters, sisters, brothers. And I knew that there were some really compelling stories out there that people needed to hear, because one of the biggest problems that family members of inmates face is a terrible stigma and a stereotyping and an automatic devaluation in the eyes of a lot of people. That if you're connected to an inmate or if you love someone that society has deemed unlovable, there must be something defective about you. And so nothing that you say or nothing that you do has the same validity to a lot of people. And so I wanted to try to get rid of some of that stigma, have people open up their hearts and minds a little bit and look at what the reality is. And what the reality is that there are regular, hardworking, everyday people who are living life, and all of a sudden an unconventional event happens in their life, and they end up with someone that they love in prison. Some of the people that I tell their stories in Guilty Hearts, I already knew. They were families that I had gotten to know, like I said, through criminal justice reform or through being involved with an inmate. Others, I kind of put out feelers because I knew that my circle of people that I had already experienced wasn't big enough to fill out the book, and I didn't want it to just deal with Missouri either. So I put feelers out in prison wife groups and said, "Hey, I'm looking for stories. If you're interested, contact me." And that gave me another batch of people to look through. And also, my best friend from college, her name's Mary. She lives in Denver. She's adopted, and she does a lot of genealogy work and adoption group work. And when I first set up my author account a couple of years ago, when Banknotes was coming out, she on Facebook, she told me, "Send friend requests to all of my friends," right, so that I could start building a base. And so I got to know people, and Mary then put a call out in her circle of adoption and genealogy people and said, "Do any of you have a story that you would like Caroline to tell?" And that's how I got some of the others.
Well, I read the book. I read it in a couple days, and having read Banknotes and really appreciated the writing and the structure of that book, I really appreciated the writing and the structure of the one Guilty Hearts as well. And but I did notice a pattern, and I don't know if it was on purpose or if you even noticed the pattern, but I noticed there was a lot of women that were falling in love with people who were not yet in prison or out and then went back in, but they were older than the inmate.
There's two stories in Guilty Hearts where the woman is older than the inmate, and people, I know I've had a few people say that they were uncomfortable with that, but they're true stories. So I don't know what to tell the people who aren't sympathetic or comfortable with that situation, because if the roles were reversed and it was an older man with a younger woman, people wouldn't even bat an eye.
And it's no biggie. I just, you know, it just.
It's something that people have have brought up to me, and not always in a kind way. And I think that's unfortunate, because it's kind of strange, isn't it, that an even greater stigma than loving somebody who's in prison is if you're a woman who's older than your partner.
Well, I suppose so. You know,
that says a lot,
like,
I think.
It's like constantly picking the scab off a sore.
Yeah.
Oh, to quote a very bad simile.
Caroline, I got called in off the bench a little late here, so I didn't get a chance to read all of the book. But you had mentioned that there's a stigma attached, and I was wondering, is it similar if it's a person who's already married to the inmate before they go in, as opposed to someone who gets involved with the inmate after they've been incarcerated? Is there any difference at all, or not?
There is a difference in that the person who meets and falls in love with someone after they've gone to prison are considered completely off their rocker. Like, why would you choose an inmate when there are all these millions of men out there who are great? Well, for those of us who have lived for a while, there aren't an overabundance of men breaking down the door trying to say, let me sweep you off your feet. You know what I mean? Like, there's this myth that if you would just talk to the neighbor, well, he would be a fine substitute for whoever you love in prison. And that's insulting to actually everybody, that there's a notion that as long as you can plug that block into that square, that's all it takes, that the person themselves don't really matter, that it's just any old person would do. Well, we wouldn't like to think that we were as easily replaceable in our relationships, that, you know, your wives couldn't just go, oh, well, I'll take him on aisle 3, and it would be the same. And that's kind of the opinion that women are given when it comes to having somebody in prison. As far as if you, there's a different stigma attached to someone who is already in a relationship with someone, and then they go to prison.
Uh-huh.
That stigma starts the moment the person is arrested. We all know that we're supposed to be considered innocent until proven guilty, but we know for a fact that when that news report comes on and they've got somebody's mugshot, we've already condemned that person. Already dog meat, and they're horrible people. They don't even need to go to trial. Everybody who saw the news report goes, oh, they're guilty. They need to be thrown away forever. And so that's what happens to the families who are already connected. People start looking at you like, oh, I don't know. You're related to him. You know, are you as trustworthy as we thought you were before? And I have a family member who, not that he's overly sympathetic or anything, but when he was a kid, he's an in-law. When he was a child, his father went to prison. And it was traumatic for him because he was 10, and suddenly all the neighborhood kids weren't allowed to play with him anymore. So they're both vicious stigmas. They're different. But the overall umbrella stigma is the same, that there's a lot of pressure from society and from people that we know and our own families to kill the relationship, push that person as far away from the inmate, just put that guy on a shelf, move forward, leave him behind, and forget about him. And as I explain in the book, that's not really the best thing for society in the long run.
Well, now, is this nationwide, or is this more prevalent in Missouri or more prevalent in Texas?
It's everywhere.
I understand that the visiting can be horrendous, and I understand that the guards can be extremely rude and untoward, you know, whoever's coming in to visit the inmate, because that makes them as guilty as the inmate in the guards' eyes.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've seen examples when I worked inside the prison. It was one of the graduation ceremonies that took place, and instead of celebrating the fact that these men had actually accomplished something, they had earned college credits and they had finished their business module, the prison almost acted like, oh, gee, do we really have to do this? And when it came time for the ceremony, for about a half an hour after the graduation, families got to talk and mingle and see their loved one that was incarcerated and shake the hands of the professors who had taught the classes, etc. And the prison missed a golden opportunity to have a great PR moment to say, thank you very much for coming here today. I know that you're as proud as we are of your men who have completed this program. We really hope you get an opportunity to come back and visit at visiting time. Thank you so much for driving long distances and taking your time to show support and encourage them. Have a good day. No, that's not what happened at all. Everybody's eating their cake and talking, and all of a sudden the guard barked, this is over. You need to get out of here. Time's up. And the employees treated the family members, the grandmas and the little kids and the wives and the sisters, as though they were criminals too. And I can remember standing there thinking, you guys might think it's okay to treat the men that way once they go back from the visiting area into the prison itself, but these people haven't committed any crimes except, in your mind, loving someone who's here.
Mm-hmm. And this was before, you haven't even been able to visit Keith, have you?
No, I haven't.
So they're doing a good job of keeping you two separate.
Yeah, they are. And we had hoped, when I had my interview with you last year, we had hoped that we could get married in March.
Right.
But that didn't happen either, because the prison that he was at in Charleston, Missouri, denied our request, because they said, well, you're not on his visiting list. And I thought, well, no kidding, you're the ones that won't let me on his visiting list. But, yeah, nice how they were able to deny me for something they had control over.
Sure, catch
and
22.
So
yeah.
I told them, wait a minute, I know the policy says that even if you're not on somebody's visiting list, you can still get married.
Mm-hmm.
So I involved a legislator, a state legislator, who got a response from Jefferson City at the Capitol and higher up in the DOC. And they told us at first, well, okay, you can get married, but it's going to have to be a non-contact visit, which means basically we'd be standing in separate rooms. There'd be glass between us.
Uh-huh.
We wouldn't be able to exchange rings. We wouldn't even be able to give each other a kiss. And when I told Keith what their terms were, he was like, oh, absolutely not. We are not going to get married behind glass. It would be different if we were doing this just to get a tax write-off to claim married, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But we want an actual marriage.
Right.
And so we said, no, that's not acceptable. And I got back in contact with the legislator's office and with the office in Jefferson City. And they relented, and they said, okay, you can have a contact visit for the wedding, but we can only spend 30 minutes together. So if the ceremony ended at 10 minutes, it was over.
Right.
It's not as though we'll have 20 minutes then to visit.
Right.
So it's however long the ceremony lasts, but it can't be longer than 30 minutes. But then what happened is Keith's level dropped, which is a good thing. It means he's closer to coming home, and it means that he's had good behavior over the years, so he's done nothing to keep his level at a maximum security level. And so he was transferred to a different prison inside the state, but each facility has different dates, like twice a year. One might have May and October, one might have March and September. They're different times of year, and only one date during that month that you can get married. So we had to start all over the place, but all over again. So we are thinking that we're going to be able to get married this October. That is the plan.
Unless he's moved again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or somebody opens up a different can of red tape. You
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or he gets pissed and punches a guard.
Well, he's not going to do that.
Not a good idea.
No. Keith has never even had a write-up in prison. Yeah. So he's a level-headed guy.
You know, I found it amazing as I was reading through Guilty Hearts that there seemed to be a lot of pushback by a lot of the families. Some of them would acquiesce, and some of them would come around to your way of thinking, or the character's way of thinking. But it seemed like a lot of the brothers were the ones that were pushing back the hardest. Brothers, uncles, and fathers.
Yep.
And I can almost see that, but I don't understand it. I can see it because I was raised in a different kind of family, so.
Well, you can see why they are that way, though you don't agree with the severity
of it.
You know, it's a tough situation.
It has to be a tough situation, especially if the woman has children. That's got to be tough. That's got to be tough. Because here's, whether she's married to the inmate or not, here's this man that is in her life, theoretically going to be with these children eventually, and what's he going to do to him when he gets out, and is he going to beat you up because he's a convict? Well, not all convicts are like that, which is an extremely good point that you make time and time again, Carolyn.
Yeah, that it's amazing how people automatically assign the label of monster to anyone who's
right.
in prison.
Right.
And that's just not the case. It was kind of funny. This part wasn't funny, but something that one of my friends that I worked with at the prison said something that was funny. My brother disowned me mm-hmm. as soon as he found out that Keith and I were in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ironic thing is that when I first met Keith, when I first hired him to work for me,
right.
my brother, who lived in the St. Louis area where Keith's crimes took place, was fascinated. He wanted to hear all about it. It was edge of the seat. What's he like? Do you know any inside details of his crimes? Blah, 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 right?
Where did he hide the gun?
Then he thought it was, where did he hide the money?
Where did he hide the money and the gun?
Well, he had no gun. He
right,
never had
right,
a gun.
Right, right.
And the money was spent just to cover living expenses
sure.
for himself and his daughters. And so my brother thought that was fascinating, that his little sister knew this infamous bank robber from St. Louis. Then, when he found out that I was writing a book about Keith, he thought that was wonderful, too, because his sister would make money off of knowing this guy. Well, first of all, he doesn't understand how writing works, but...
No, apparently not.
No.
Yeah. But he thought that was fun. But when he found out that I love Keith, that I value him as a human being, he could not abide by that, and he completely wrote me off. He told me, we don't associate with anyone who's in prison, nor do we associate with anyone who does. And I initially tried to say a few things like, Luke, you can't be serious. And he cut me down short. This was over the phone. And he repeated his statement about not associating with anybody who associates with anyone in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally just said, well, then it looks like our association is over.
Right. Well,
so
what else are you gonna
do? Ask me, it's completely upside down. To me, the icky situation would be ingratiating yourself mm-hmm. to someone of fame just to write their story and make money off of it.
Right.
That seems unsettling to do something like that. But loving somebody, valuing another human being, shouldn't be reviled.
Right.
Now, what was ironic was that one of my friends that I worked with, that I taught with at the prison, she's like, why would your brother have any problem with Keith? He's the perfect brother-in-law. He's never going to get drunk at Thanksgiving. He's never going to borrow his tools and not bring them back.
Right.
He's keeping you happy and occupied. Why would he have a problem with Keith? And that's a good question, because it's not like, it's kind of like what I was saying earlier. You don't just go out and get a replacement guy.
Right.
So there's no guarantee for these people who are going, well, I'm just trying to protect them, that the next guy that she starts dating is going to be a saint.
Yeah, could be. Well, Keith would make a great brother-in-law. I mean, if you run short of money, he knows where there's a ready stack of cash.
Terrible.
I'm just teasing you.
I'll throw something at him here in a minute when we're off air. Caroline, there was one thing, and like I said, I didn't get a chance to read the entire book, but there was a point you made, and I wanted to follow up on, is you bring out the importance of maintaining connection for the inmates to their families while they're being incarcerated. And I was wondering, is there any studies that have been done or anything out there that shows if an inmate has had that close contact with the family once they do get out, does that tend to lead to them not repeat offending and not coming back into prison again? Or has anyone even looked into that?
Oh, definitely. As a matter of fact, when I worked for the prison system, we would go to trainings, we'd have seminars we had to go to, and the Department of Corrections itself teaches employees that the number one indicator on whether or not an inmate will reoffend after they're released is whether or not they have a positive social network when they get out.
Mm-hmm.
So even the prison system itself knows that the one thing that is going to keep a guy from committing another crime is whether or not they have people on the outside who, number one, they can be good for.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, that will give them support and acceptance.
See, I would think that would be the first thing.
If they get out of prison and they go back to the gang, that's not going to help them any.
No.
But if they get out and they have a wife and they have children and their family still accept them and their friends still accept them, they have something worth fighting for, because it is a fight when they get out, because a lot of times they can't find a job, they can't find housing. It's a difficult path to take once you have that felony record.
Right.
And it's especially important for them to have people who make them feel socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Because almost everybody, it's a rare instance of anybody that you can find that doesn't want someone to care about them. And what happens when a man gets out of prison and his wife has left him, his kids don't want to have anything to do with him, his siblings have left him in the dust, he tries to call up old friends and they won't answer or they hang up when it's him. When you get out, imagine you've been in a time capsule for 20 years and you get out of prison and everything's different.
Mm.
And even the people that you know how to track down don't want to have anything to do with you, you would feel very lost. And that's what these guys go through who have been abandoned by everyone that they knew.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, the prison culture, even though they hate being in prison, at least they belong there.
Mm-hmm.
If they go back to prison, nobody's going to judge them for being an inmate. They're all inmates.
Right.
It's part of the deal. You're accepted. You're no different than anybody else. And what makes it even more dangerous is that repeat offenders, people who go back for 2, 3, 4 stints in prison, actually gain more respect within the prison population for being a veteran. And so that's a really dangerous incentive that we have set up if we want to alienate families from the inmates, is we're actually making it more attractive to go back to prison. And how do people go back to prison? They commit more crime. And that crime, many times, will be whoever is convenient. And mm-hmm. that could be you, it could be me, it could be your grandma, it could be the kid that lives next door. It's a dangerous situation for society in general not to do what they can to make sure that that transition from prison back into regular society goes smoothly.
Mm-hmm. Do you happen to know, or have you ever done a study on the recidivism of the people who have families and wives and girlfriends on the outside? What the recidivism is for them going back in versus the inmates and the convicts that come out and they don't have anybody on the outside?
I don't remember the department giving specific statistical numbers. They just said that the leading indicator on whether or not someone who leaves prison will go back mm-hmm. is whether or not they have those ties.
Mm-hmm. But then again, having ties, having the ties of the family and the wife and the support of the people around you doesn't necessarily mean that there's not going to be an event that's going to land them right back in the slammer again.
Oh, no, that's definitely true. Just like everybody who has committed a crime had a loving family up until that point, or
sure.
the guy who ends up in the drunk driving accident, the businessman who had a few too many cocktails at the Christmas party and goes home and kills a family of four on the way, they had a good set of connections in their life, too.
Mm-hmm.
But then that event happened and ruined everything
mm-hmm.
and sent them to prison. So it's not an absolute guarantee, but like I said, it's not as though there are these autonomous, unconnected people walking around in our society and they're the ones that commit crime.
Mm-hmm.
It's merely a factor that will greatly lessen whether or not somebody will reoffend.
Okay. I can get behind that.
I have when I was doing some show prep this afternoon, I had Googled women who had married or gotten into relationships with male inmates, and then I did the reverse. I tried to find men who had married women.
I'm just gonna ask that.
And I couldn't find anything. I mean, I'm finding like Joyce Mitchell back in New York who helped the two guys escape,
yeah.
And then you got Shirley Book who wound up marrying the Hillside Strangler after she couldn't get married to Ted Bundy. But you find these examples in your Google search, but there's nothing of a man wanting to marry a female inmate. And I was just wondering, have you ever come across that?
There are men who stand by the women that are incarcerated.
But I mean, before
However,
before they huh? met, they get incarcerated, and then the man meets and wants to get married. That was the one I couldn't find.
It happens.
Okay.
But it isn't. It isn't the hallmark of a prison relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, that starts in prison. There are men who will fall in love with female inmates, but it doesn't happen as often. And I don't know, maybe possibly part of that is just we're looking at sheer numbers. There are more men incarcerated than there are women.
Could be.
Okay, that's
yeah.
true. That's true.
So looking at it from just a sample, you know, snapshot,
mm-hmm.
there's just not as many people to work with to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But if you notice, when you Googled people, you came up with the outliers. You came up with the Joyce Mitchell who helped two killers escape from the Clinton Correctional Center in New York.
Right.
Those are the ones, and I talk about this in Guilty Hearts, those are the ones that splash into the headlines. And boy, it makes for great television and all kinds of salacious headlines.
Right. I was going to ask you.
Those are not the standard prison relationship.
So that's
at all.
Not the norm.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is that the exception or the rule? Which one was it? But it sounds like it's the exception.
It is definitely the exception. Very few prison relationships have anything to do with escape. Even the ones that are not wholesome, that aren't on the up and up, if manipulation is involved, it has more to do with, hey, can I get a woman to put, or several women, to get money on my books?
Mm-hmm.
Can I convince somebody to bring drugs into me? That kind of thing. It's not about an escape attempt. Those are extremely rare and seldom have anything to do with a relationship.
Yeah,
even if the
too.
Person was working in the prison.
Yeah.
Is it something to do with celebrity, too? Because, you know, most of the ones that came up early were Ted Bundy. There's the, I can't remember her name, who wants to get married to Charles Manson. Is there that celebrity attraction that's driving some of it to an extent?
Oh, well, there is, but you have to consider the fact that the very fact that they're celebrities says that there's not too many of them.
That's true.
If everybody was famous, then being famous wouldn't mean anything.
Right.
So
that's absolutely
you're
right.
Looking at 2.4 million people who are in prison. Very, very few of them are one of those headliners.
Yeah.
And there are people who will gravitate towards somebody who's famous, the Scott Peterson, people like that.
Right.
Keith ran into that situation when he was in county jail because his crimes made national headlines. He had robbed 12 banks using notes in St. Louis, and law enforcement had absolutely no idea who he was. And in fact, on the night he was arrested, the FBI agent told him, if you had stopped at number 11, we never would have known who you were. So he had been in the headlines in St. Louis for a year. He had made national headlines. And when he was arrested and he was in the county jail in St. Louis, he started getting groupie mail. He got lots of letters from women who started propositioning him. And it absolutely was repugnant to him. He was like, oh my gosh, I don't want anything to do with this at all. And he had sworn he was never going to have a relationship with anybody for as long as he was incarcerated.
Uh-huh.
And I, of course, did not go to work for the Department of Corrections to use it as a dating service.
Well, I would hope.
So, yeah, I did not. And so we're kind of an unlikely pair because both of us went into it with that being literally the last thing we wanted to have happen. But then we met. And we had an instant connection, and not a creepy kind of connection, but more just we found each other fascinating. We were able to talk to each other with an ease we had never found with anybody else from the moment we first started talking.
Yeah, I don't think you ever go into any situation expecting to fall in love with someone.
Nope.
I mean, I went to New Mexico to help a friend with his business for a week, and I wound up meeting my wife.
Yeah, and you've been married for 140 years.
So it seems like, no. 26, 26.
I hesitate to tell you what his wife's going to be in our next book.
Yeah, let's not go there right now. She's volunteered to be a character in a book, and I keep asking her, are you sure you want to do this? And she says yes. So
because, you know, most of the women were fallen angels.
Yeah. It's in a Western, so this could be interesting. I could be in divorce court next year. Who knows?
Nah, what the hell? Oh, let's switch gears for just a few minutes, and we're going to be running. God, this hour's going by.
Where did
so
it go?
Fast. What was I going to ask her? I just had a brain fart. Just a huge one.
Hang
okay,
there,
start talking, Caroline. I might pick it up. Hum a few bars.
Oh, start talking? Yeah, I can do that. I'm good at talking.
I think he got it.
I was going to say, let's switch gears a little bit now.
Okay.
Switching gears, let's take a couple of minutes to talk about where you are on prison sentencing reform. I know you've been working very hard at that. And so where are we on the reform, at least in the state of Missouri?
Well, at the end of banknotes, I was really encouraged because the bill that I had Don Phillips, a representative
right.
from conservative Southern Missouri, a Republican sponsor, made it all the way to debate on the House floor, which is really difficult for a freshman bill, a bill that had never been even considered before. There had been no criminal justice reform bill of any type even close to this get that far mm-hmm. in Missouri. So I was really encouraged. Like the day after it stalled out on the House floor, only because people were questioning, you know, they were trying to read into it more than what it was. It was very simple. It only dealt with first-time offenders, first-degree robbery, or first-degree assault. And people were like, well, if this has to do with pedophiles, I don't want anything to do with it. Well, no, it doesn't have anything to do with pedophiles. Well, if this has to do with someone who beats up grandma, no, it has nothing to do with elder abuse. But people got confused. It kind of stalled. But it looked like it had momentum for the next year. And the day after it had stalled, another representative had called me very excited, saying he wanted to introduce the bill the next year.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, but I was kind of at a disadvantage because I had two foot surgeries that knocked me out of doing much of anything for about 4 or 5 months. So I couldn't be driving to Jefferson City to pound the halls or anything or talk to people. I'm not exactly sure what his goal was. He sponsored bills for 2 years, that year and then the following year, which would be this last year. They were so poorly written that you almost have to wonder if he tried sabotaging the effort.
Mm-hmm.
Because his bill from this year actually eliminated 85% mandatory minimums,
mm-hmm.
except for the people who have 85% mandatory minimums.
Right. So if you've already been sentenced within 85, it's not going to affect you.
Oh, it wasn't. No, it wasn't just if you've already been sentenced. It wasn't. It didn't have to do with retroactivity.
Mm-hmm.
It had to do with the fact that the crimes that he excluded from being considered were the only crimes in Missouri that have an 85% mandatory minimum.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So it was completely worthless. But I have this summer met with another Southern Missouri staunchly conservative Republican legislator who is going to sponsor the bill again, the same one that Don Phillips had sponsored in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I stress that these are Republicans who are sponsoring the bill is because, first of all, it's a very fiscally conservative piece of legislation that I'm talking about. It will save the state millions of dollars over time. But what's in the immediate sense so important about that is that the state of Missouri has a super majority of Republicans. Democrats could literally introduce the cure to cancer, and I think it would be killed in committee.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important that Republicans are taking the leadership role on this legislation, which actually stems from policies that Missouri adopted and other states adopted too during the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the early 90s, under the Clinton crime bill, states were given federal funding incentives if they increased their Class A felony mandatory minimums to 85%, just like the federal government had raised theirs to.
Mm-hmm.
And so money started pouring into states who accepted that. Missouri raised theirs from 40% to 85%. And the difference in that was, say you had a 20-year sentence, instead of serving 8 years before you were eligible for parole, you had to serve 17 years
right.
before you were eligible for parole. But Missouri didn't care about paying for that extra time because it had millions of dollars of federal money rolling
sure,
in.
Sure, flowing in from the feds.
Yes. And then in 2004, the state of Missouri thought, hey, this is working out really well. What if we expanded our statute so that even more people qualified as 85% offenders? So statutes were broadened. Attempted murder, which is pretty self-explanatory, you had to actually intend to kill the person, was expanded to be called first-degree assault, which says now only that you have to inflict serious bodily injury. And that could be anything from breaking someone's eye socket to shooting them multiple times and they're in a coma. You just didn't quite kill them. That starts including a lot of people. So then armed robbery, where you had to actually have a weapon,
mm-hmm.
was expanded to be first-degree robbery, mm-hmm. which now all it takes is for somebody to say that the perpetrator could have had a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, any of us, like, I don't know that you don't have a weapon right now. I could say I think Jim Christina had a weapon when we were on air.
Well, I do.
That's no. enough in Missouri.
I think he's got a bazooka over there.
I feel safer. And yeah. So that's all it takes in Missouri. And what happened was all of a sudden we had people coming out of the woodwork who qualified to be put in for 85%. The problem is about 7 or 8 years ago, all the federal funding went away.
Mm-hmm.
And so Missouri had used those millions of dollars that poured in the years that it was still coming in to build more prisons. And it was almost a field of dreams. And so we went from having just a couple of prisons in the 80s to we have 22 prison camps right now, 21 of them in use.
Wow.
That's a huge expansion
right.
for a state with a population of our size.
Right.
So
right.
We're now footing the bill for a lot of years of incarceration, all because it was a money grab back in the 90s and early 2000s.
Right. Well, unfortunately, that's what they used to say. That's the way the bulb bumps.
Yeah.
I hate to cut
you
off.
Okay, I was just going to say quickly, though, is that legislators back then passed that law, changed that law for a particular reason at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Legislators today can change the law
sure.
because conditions have changed.
Sure.
So it's not like it's set in stone.
There's no law that can't be changed.
Exactly.
So anyway,
slavery was a law.
There you go. I hate to cut you off, Caroline, but I am out of time. Can you let our listeners know where they can contact you? Website, Facebook, email.
Yeah, my website is boonyhatbandit.com. That's boonyhatbandit.com.
Okay.
My books, Banknotes and Guilty Hearts, are both available on Amazon.com or at Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
And on Facebook, I'm Caroline Giamonco, author.
There you go. Thanks again for joining us, Caroline. And when you get this new book out, get a hold of the bookie, Jerry, and we can get you booked in. We're booked through April of next year, so.
That is fine. And no, thank you for having me on. I just think it's important for people to maybe look at the humanity little bit more than automatically making decisions about people and couples and families.
I think you're right. And thanks again for joining us. And have a good evening and have a glass of wine.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Caroline Giamonco.
Hey, that was some interesting information.
She's always got a fistful. You know, she's just always got a bunch of stuff hanging on. Hey, congratulations, Richard, on your
Dragon Award
finalist.
Yeah, we got one more step. Real quick, if I can throw this out, starting tomorrow,
yes,
Escaping Infinity will be available as an ebook on Amazon for 99 cents for the rest of August.
All righty then. So everybody who wants to read what all this hoopla is about.
It's less than a cup of cheap McDonald's coffee now, so go out and buy a coffee.
There you go. Or Starbucks.
Or Starbucks, there. Yeah.
Actually, I wanted to give a notice about Chelsea Hickman, who was on a show, I don't remember, maybe a month and a half ago. She was on with Michael Druxman. Mm-hmm. And her play, Mercy Meal, has been picked up for next year off-Broadway.
Cool.
And they also are going to be using the music that she has written for that show. And they just absolutely loved it. So the music is going to be used elsewhere. And she's just doing really well. And as we find out more information about Chelsea as it comes in, we'll let you guys know.
Well, outstanding. Congrats, Chelsea.
Yeah, she's really a nice girl. So August 10th, which is, I believe, next week, we have writer Patrick Brown. I'm right in the middle of his new book. The 17th, we have Chuck Walsh, who is a returning author, and he's sent us a novel to read, and I'm sure I've done that. I got to read two books a week. August 24th, special night for us, is the creator of Longmire, Mr. Craig Johnson, will be with us here in the Writer's Block. This is his second trip in, and last to him, he was here is January 7th of 2016. So this is a year and a half later, and we have Craig again, and they're going to be going into their last season of Longmire, so I want to talk to him about that. And we've got Mike Bond going to be he's a New York Times best-selling author, Mike Bond is. I'm right in the middle of his book called Assassins. It's fascinating, and he's got another one out called Snow, which is it's also, I'm sure, going to be fascinating. I have not opened the cover yet.
Yeah.
on September 7th, we have a special two-hour show. Richard will be here with us.
I'll be on the other mic.
Kathleen Rogers will be on the phone with us. She's a writer from Texas. The show is going to focus. And Caroline, if you're still listening, you're more than welcome to call in. It's going to be a show about agents and publishers and just writers' melees in general.
Yeah.
In fact, Richard and I were talking about just the general melees in general coming in tonight. So, and of course, anybody who's an author or agent, publisher, is welcome to call in. And that number, of course, is 818-602-4929. And we'll be announcing that until the 7th. And for teaser, we have a very new feature coming up, two exciting new authors to our program. Authors Bianca Mare, her book, Hum If You Don't Know the Words, is about her growing up in South Africa as a young child during the apartheid era. And it's fascinating. It's a fascinating read, and we're going to be talking with her about it. And, of course, the big coup for the Writer's Block is in April. We have writer and just Mr. Prolific himself, John Sanford, is the author of the Prey novels, and Virgil Flowers and several other novels that he's written. And he'll be on the phone with us, and we get to talk to John for about an hour. So that's exciting. We are booked up through April of next year. So anybody who wants to get a hold of the bookie and possibly set aside some time, the email address is guestwb@yahoo.com. And that's going to be it for us. Thank you, Richard, for coming in with me tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
And this is another Thursday shot right in the butt. So we'll be back next Thursday on the Writer's Block at LA Talk Radio. Same bat time, same bat station.